I think Nicky's got a little more in his game. And he showed it.
Paul Maurice after Wednesday's game against the Arizona Coyotes. A Jets victory. We'll talk about those comments related to Nikolaj Ehlers a little bit later on in the program. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio for the next 3 hours. We're getting you set for the Jets and the Blues, a 2 p.m. puck drop this afternoon at MTS Center, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN 1290 and watch on TSN 3. Best way to reach us here in studio is via Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve is our Facebook page and the website. It's got the latest Jets and Manitoba Moose news. That's IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to Ezzy and to Dave. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday, a typical rainy Saturday, January day here in Winnipeg.
I don't know about you guys, but I almost wiped out 5 times just walking to my car. Yeah. It's like a treacherous. It's a skating rink outside.
Yeah. I had the same problem when I was the dog and I were slipping and sliding as we went out this morning as well.
That's why you got to put some boots on Brixton.
Yeah, Brixton doesn't wear boots. Very, very small legs. The boots keep falling off. We've tried for years now.
By the way, if Donald Trump is, you know, thinking that climate change doesn't exist, just come to Winnipeg, because this past November, we saw plus 15 weather and no snow on the ground.
Yeah.
And then here we are now in late January, and we're getting plus 1, plus 2 in rain.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
we have peaks. We're used to peaks and valleys, but it's generally not to 4 degrees and rain. That's
no,
it's
a little bit odd that we're in, you know, sort of Vancouver winter time right now here in Winnipeg. I mean, I'll take it, because I try to disconnect myself from thinking about the actual, you know, terrible ramifications it is on the world, you know, the polar ice caps, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's better than the 40 below that we were experiencing.
By the way, Dave, I didn't realize I was sitting beside David Suzuki right now.
Well,
but
you started this. You started it off. Don't blame me for that. You walked right into that.
I hate this weather. I mean, it's the end of January. I want it to be minus 30. I want there to be snow on the ground. I want to be playing outdoor hockey.
He loves a slop.
Yeah.
Yeah. His mother was a mutter.
True. His father was a mutter. It's too dangerous. Like, I don't have winter tires, and I pulled up to, I always pick up Dave before the show, and I'm pulling up to a four-way.
You just drove right through your front door.
No, but I actually did, like, nobody was on the streets because it was like 7:15.
Yeah.
Right? But I went right through a four-way stop at River Heights just because I couldn't stop in time.
I've seen you go through four-way stops because you haven't even noticed they were there. So really, this isn't much different between one and the other.
This seems to be a bit of a progression.
Yeah. That's true. For the record, you could get winter tires. They are readily available.
Yeah. But
in fact, there's even a program that allows you to buy them on layaway.
On layaway, pretty much, for a very affordable price.
I'm saving up for a wedding, though.
That is true.
It's true.
I mean, I can't afford winter tires. I can barely afford lunch.
You could afford to get an autograph from Jake the Snake Roberts last night.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah.
You could pay an extra $10 and Jake the Snake gave you a DDT, so it was awesome.
Oh, really? So you're Jake the Snake. So you went, you know, did you introduce yourself as, like, Ezzy the Rodent or something, you know, to Jake the Snake? Is that what happened there last night?
You know. No, that wouldn't be my nickname, but that was a great time at the Park Theater last night. I mean, I think I speak for everybody of a certain generation. Jake the Snake was one of your, you know, all-time favorite wrestlers if you were, you know, a kid that grew up in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, right?
Didn't he steal Elizabeth at one point from Macho Man? Wasn't she like his manager?
I don't know, but his snake did bite.
Kidnapping.
The snake bit Macho Man.
The snake bit Macho Man?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know if you've ever seen a documentary about sort of when Jake was on his, let's say, a bad time in his life, but it's very enlightening, and it's good to see, I assume, that he's clean and sober, because that was certainly an issue for Jake the Snake.
Yeah,
for
Jake the Snake Resurrection from 2015, and Diamond Dallas Page helped him out with his Diamond Dallas Page yoga. So, it's a great story. He's had some great stories last night.
You want to take that one, Dave, or should we just move on to the Jets?
I think we should probably move on to something called the Winnipeg Jets.
Winnipeg Jets, already. Like I said, in action, 2 o'clock this afternoon. 6 hours from now, puck drop at MTS Center. Really, we've said it really ad nauseum for the last number of weeks, but when you look at where the Jets are over the next 7 games, your next 7 games are all against Western Conference opponents. 6 of those 7 are against teams that are ahead of you in the standings. The exception to that being the Colorado Avalanche. The Jets are at Colorado. That's 2 weeks from today after the All-Star break. But aside from that, their next 7 games, 3 of their next, you know, then you got today and then Monday and Tuesday against Anaheim and San Jose. This is this seven-game stretch, I think, really will tell you 100% whether February, March, and April are going to be complete write-offs or if the Jets are going to be able to scratch and claw their way back into the playoff race in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And Drew and I would even shorten that amount of games to the next three games at home being it's make or break.
Sure.
It is really make or break for the Jets. And, you know, it feels like we've been saying this a lot, and we just talked about it on Thursday night's NHL This Week show, mm-hmm. but it really is true. I mean, the Jets have an important game this afternoon against St. Louis, and then they've got the games on Monday and Tuesday against the Ducks and Sharks. But for me, I think you got to win all three of these games. And at the very least, you have to get points in three of these games. And then if you want to look at the next four games before the All-Star break, you've got Chicago on the 26th, right before the All-Star break. I mean, at the very least, Dave, you got to win three of these four games. And, you know, you just mentioned it, Drew, the next seven games, you've only got one game against a non-playoff team, right? So, I mean, that game against Colorado, you'd circle that on your calendar and say, okay, well,
You have a Dallas game when you're out of the playoffs.
But I guess I still consider Dallas to be a playoff team just because of their
reputation-wise.
Right. So, I mean, you've got, at the very least, five of the seven games are going to be tough games, but they're all going to be tough games. I mean, there are no easy games in the NHL, right, Dave? So, I mean, this is a very crucial part of the season. And really, the last month and a half, 2 months has been, you know, do-or-die time for the Jets because you had such a poor November, right? So, I mean, it starts this Saturday against St. Louis in about 6 hours' time, and you know it's going to continue. Anaheim and San Jose are very good teams. We just saw San Jose last week in California, and you know they look pretty good against the Jets, and they've been on fire. Brent Burns is, what, fourth in the NHL in scoring right now, and you have guys like Joe Thornton that haven't even got going. So that's going to be a tough game, but yeah, absolutely. You know, you look at this next seven-game stretch, I mean, at the very least, what do you have to win, five?
I think that's a fair number. You probably have to win five, even, or go 5-1-1, see if you can steal an extra point there. But you look at today's game against the Blues. I mean, the Blues have been struggling, as you know, it's been well documented. Their goaltending, which we will discuss, throughout the course of the program, has been atrocious. It's probably the only team that's worse than the Jets in that is the St. Louis Blues this season.
Well, and you have Jake Allen not even coming on the trip.
Because he's an absolute mental case right now. He's completely lost all of his confidence. He's been completely shell-shocked. This is the proverbial four-point game today. The Blues are right now 5 points ahead of the Winnipeg Jets. If the Jets are able to take care of business on home ice against a beat-up, sort of mentally shattered Blues team right now, all of a sudden you're only 3 points back of the Blues. You will have leapfrogged the Dallas Stars depending on what they do tonight at home against Washington. And I know it's a little bit early in the season to be scoreboard watching, but it's not that early in the season to be scoreboard watching. This game against the Blues, there's a huge difference between being 3 points behind the Blues after tonight's game and being 7 points behind the Blues in tonight's game.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing to consider is the Jets will have played two more games in St. Louis at that point. But still, like, the fact is that this is a critical win. The Jets have been very good in the Central. I believe they're 9-4-1 this season, including, I think, 5-0 at home against Central teams, so that might bode well for the team today against St. Louis at the MTS Center. But, no, you guys are absolutely right. The fact is that, you know, you can't afford, you know, Matthew Perreault. It feels like we've been saying it, and even the Jets have been saying it. Like, Matthew Perreault keeps talking every game. It's like, this one is one we have to win. This is one we have to win. And he's right. I mean, the fact is you've put yourself behind. You've dug yourself a hole, and now you have to get out. And because the West seems to be so middling around the wild card teams, you know, I mean, you look, the reality is first and second in the Central, Minnesota, Chicago, nobody's touching them. I mean, they've got it locked up. But St. Louis is ripe for the picking. Now, I'm not saying it's the Jets that are going to be doing the picking, but there's definitely, I mean, St. Louis is a good team, relatively speaking. But if you look at their goals for, goals against, they're very similar to Winnipeg. You know, they've got, I think theirs is a minus 11 differential. The Jets are a minus 13. Mm-hmm. But they've both scored about the same amount of goals.
The Jets have scored four more, but your point
right,
is
again,
exactly right.
Yeah, and again, but having a couple more games. So, you know, and they've allowed a few more goals against. But, you know, like I said, we're going to see a goalie potentially in this Phoenix Copley, who those of us who were at the Moose game last Friday saw play for Chicago Wolves and beat the Manitoba Moose. So he had a 35 save performance. He played pretty well. And again, like you guys were talking about, you know, Allen seems to have Chuck Knoblauch syndrome right now, and there's some mental block with him, so they had to leave him at home. So this is a game you have to take advantage. You know, you may have an opportunity here because St. Louis, similar to what Winnipeg was maybe still is, has a bit of a concern with their goaltending, right? So they the team may not have that faith that the goalie is going to come up with the save, and that's something that if they can't move forward properly on the ice, they have to be thinking about, you know, what's going to be happening behind them. That's something Winnipeg can take advantage of, especially with the matchup options.
Yeah, and Dave, we saw Patrick Laine on the ice wearing a non-contact jersey. So, I mean, the Jets can look at Patrick Laine, his imminent return. He's obviously not going to play this afternoon, Drew, but I mean, we know that he's going to be back probably within the next week or so. So, I mean, I think that you can look at what's happening with, you know, some of the injured players that you're going to get back. Marco Dano's a little bit away. We don't know what's going on with Tyler Myers, but I think Andre Pavlik has galvanized the group a little bit. I know it's just one game, but I really think that, you know, the veteran goaltender that got you into the playoffs last year, pardon me, 2 years ago, him coming back, getting that big win, I think is important, and most likely we'll see him this afternoon against the St. Louis Blues. And we'll talk to Jeremy Rutherford in about 45 minutes. We'll find out if it's going to be, as Dave mentioned, Phoenix Copley or Carter Hutton, because Jake Allen, as we mentioned, isn't on the road trip. But, I mean, guys, they're simply running out of games, and this is game 49. So this is do or die. If you lose this game, doesn't mean you're not going to the playoffs, but your room for error just continues to grow. Pardon me, it continues to diminish. The more games you lose. So, I mean, and Dave makes a good point. I mean, St. Louis, you know, that's a team that you can catch. And Drew, you mentioned it. I mean, there is a big difference between 3 points and 7 points. It's a 4 point game. So, I mean, they have to come out and not only get a good start, because we've seen the Jets have some issues with that in the past, especially, you know, a week and a half ago in Arizona. So they have to play a good 60-minute game, because this St. Louis Blues team can hurt you from many different angles. They've got a lot of guys that can score. And I realize that, you know, there are a few guys that are struggling a little bit this year, but led by Vladimir Tarasenko, and you got Alex Petrangelo and Kevin Shattenkirk back on defense. I mean, this is still a very good team. Yeah. The goaltending hasn't been there.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it is you really can't overemphasize how important today's game is and this streak of games for the Jets. I mean, you have Anaheim and San Jose, two teams that are really, you know, I'd say comfortably in playoff spots in the Pacific Division right now. The, you know, the Ducks have 61 points. They come in on Monday night. The Sharks, who we just saw, well, they've won 28 games out of 46. So they've won the third most games in the Western Conference, even though they are technically second in the Pacific Division behind the Ducks, because that's because the Ducks have got 9 OT losses.
As far as I'm concerned, the Sharks are the best team in the Pacific. I don't even think it's close. I realize the standings are close, but I think that Sharks team is set up nicely to go on a playoff run again.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. We talked to Kevin Kurz about that last week, that this is a team that's just, they can pretty much play this hockey for the remainder of the season, the Sharks, and they'll be comfortably in the playoffs, and they'll be not overexerting themselves in the stretch run to get to the playoffs. It's not like they have to step on the gas or anything and maybe expend more energy.
Well, Drew, you mentioned that they have 28 wins.
Yeah.
Joe Thornton hasn't scored a goal that isn't into an empty net. All of his three goals are into an empty net. So if you have I realize Joe Thornton's not a 40-goal guy, but, I mean, he hasn't even got going yet.
No. And then you got, after those two games against the Pacific Division teams Monday, Tuesday, you go to Chicago right before the All-Star break. Jets have had success in Chicago, but, you know, that doesn't really mean anything, I would suggest. Then right after the All-Star break, you come back with three more division games, at St. Louis, at Dallas, at Colorado. Well, I mean, the Avalanche have been an absolute train wreck. The Dallas Stars, even though they have been disappointing this year, well, they're still ahead of the Jets right now in the standings, tied technically, but with a game in hand. I mean, this is a crucial 7-game stretch for the Winnipeg Jets, all against Western Conference opponents, because really, as much as you're battling your Central Division opponents, like the Wild and the Blackhawks, well, you're not really battling them, because those two teams are so far ahead of everybody else. You're battling the Blues, you're battling the Predators, you're battling, you know, the Flames and the Canucks and the Kings and the Stars for those wild card spots, and for maybe even that third spot in the Central Division, given how, you know, sort of the struggles of the Central this year.
Yeah, the one thing that I think that you can expect out of a Jets and Blues game this afternoon, it's going to be a close game, because they almost always are, Dave, and there's going to be a lot of physicality, because these two teams have played each other many times since the Jets moved over from the Southeast Division, and you know, you have a lot of Winnipeg connections with, you know, Alex Steen and Ryan Reeves. I'm not sure if Ryan Reeves is going to be in the lineup, but there's a lot of Winnipeg connections on the Blues. So, I mean, you always know that these are going to be hard-fought games.
Absolutely. The Jets and the Blues, 2 o'clock this afternoon at MTS Center. When we come back, we'll discuss Paul Maurice, his comments after Wednesday's game with regard to Nikolaj Ehlers. Was the coach offside, or was he lighting a fire under a young player? We talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290. What is this song exactly? Talk by DJ Snake. Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. Sort of an interesting...
See, Alex, you're not even picking up on that. Alex played that song because we were talking about Jake the Snake.
Oh, very clever. We'll pretend that's actually what happened. This is just a happy coincidence. But, yeah, okay. Well, there you go.
Doesn't that music seem like something like when you'd walk into like a yoga retreat, like you'd hear that music?
Yeah, that's very calypso-y. I'm on a cruise.
Have you ever been to a yoga retreat? Haven't been to a yoga retreat.
You've had a mani-pedi.
I'm, in fact, going for a pedi on Monday afternoon.
Drew, that's something that the listeners don't need to hear about.
Well, I think you're the one who brought it up there.
You better get that sandblaster out.
I have no idea what either of you are talking about, for the record.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, probably the final edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Should mention that this segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys, known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you need personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Keener Jerseys, where craftsmanship makes all the difference.
Yeah, I was talking to Keener earlier this week. We're going to do one of our Keener Jerseys podcasts tomorrow.
Yeah.
And he's very excited about the NHL 100th anniversary patches that came out about 3 weeks ago.
You can add those to everybody's jerseys. Yeah. If you have a jersey and you want to be perfectly accurate, you need to go get that 100-year anniversary patch, and Keener will stitch it on for you.
Just like when Remus got his Alec Martinez jersey.
Just like the same. And he has to go back and now get the 100th anniversary patch.
Well, that jersey was from 2014, and he actually got the Stanley Cup patch on that one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, good to know. There you go. Nikolaj Ehlers. We played Paul Maurice's comments about Nikolaj Ehlers off the top of the program. Let me ask you guys this. It was a good win on Wednesday against a terrible opponent, but a good win nonetheless. Are you surprised about Paul Maurice's comments and the manner in which he made them? You know, could have sort of just taken Ehlers aside quietly after the game and mentioned it. Are you surprised he went out? And I know he was asked the question in the course of the press conference, and I know he tried to downplay it by saying, don't take this as a major criticism. You know, he just wanted a minor in-game adjustment is how he referred to it. Are you surprised he did it publicly versus privately?
Well, you know, it's funny because he qualified that statement yesterday in his scrum, and he was asked about Ehlers' play and his overall level of play, and essentially what he was saying was, I go through a number of levels of correction with a player. And actually, the question specifically was about correcting a player, i.e. a Byfuglien versus an Ehlers. And how do you do it against a veteran player versus how do you do it against a younger player?
A second-year player.
Or one of the younger guys, I think.
Sure.
But, and his comment was, I go through a number of steps. You know, first I try and do an in-game adjustment. Then I try and do... You know, then he'll do like specifically meaning he'll have a conversation with that player. Then he'll go to the adjustment of the lines where he'll move a player off a line or he'll sit him for a shift. Then he'll try something else. And if that's not working, you know, then he'll go to the next level, which is maybe making it public and kind of calling that player out. Now, Paul Maurice, just to backtrack a little bit, has said oftentimes that he won't use the media to kind of send a message, which is funny because it seems like that's exactly what he did to Nikolaj Ehlers the other day. The other thing he said, which was interesting, was he wasn't specifically talking just about that game against the Arizona Coyotes. He said, I haven't loved his game recently. Mm-hmm. Now, recently would indicate more than one, obviously, not just that one game. And, it's interesting to me because, I wrote about it on LegalCurve.com because I said, oftentimes we're so focused on the players with the puck that when you see what they're doing with that puck, i.e. a Nikolaj Ehlers, you're so impressed by it, you kind of have a tendency to forget what they're doing when they don't have the puck. And that's what Paul Maurice's criticism is about. It's not about what Nikolaj Ehlers can do with the puck, because I don't care if he's on the second line or the fourth line, as we saw, you know, especially when you put him on a fourth line with a Nick Petan, who's obviously very talented as well. But he's going to still be able to produce, which he did. He scored a goal in that, you know, he scored the sixth goal in that third period.
That was a beauty shot.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable shot. So Nikolaj Ehlers is still able to produce. But the question is, what was Nikolaj Ehlers not doing when he had the puck? And that was, I think, what Paul Maurice's criticism was.
Right. And Dave, I don't think, you know, you want to make too much out of this, Drew, because, I mean, I definitely think it's worth bringing up. But, I mean, this is simply a coach in a game. Again, if the game was 3-2, do you think he does that? I don't think he does it. I think because the game was 5-2 at that point,
sure.
I think that's why he puts Nikolaj Ehlers on that fourth line and, you know, decides to give Andrew Kopp some time on the top line. But when you're talking about Nikolaj Ehlers, I mean, he's second on the team in scoring. But when you look at the games in San Jose, L.A., Arizona, I mean, yeah, Nikolaj Ehlers didn't play as well defensively as he can. And
if -5 combined, right, on those, yes, in those three games, and those three losses as they went through the sort of the Pacific Division.
There. Right, Drew, and he's 20 years old, so he's still learning how to play the right way as a professional. If you ask any player, any coach, any scout, I know, you know, Dave talks to a lot of people, you know, at Jets games, the thing they'll tell you is the hardest to learn at the NHL level is playing without the puck. Because you think there's going to be all of this time and space that you maybe had in junior, but there really isn't. This is the best league in the world, mm-hmm, and things happen so quickly, and there isn't as much time and space as you think. And when you're Nikolaj Ehlers, you can create time and space for yourself because he's so fast and dynamic. But so, I mean, Paul Maurice is just trying to get the best out of Nikolaj Ehlers. I mean, let's be honest here. Nikolaj Ehlers is still going to be out on the top line. He's still a guy that's going to play first power play. I mean, his minutes were a little bit down against Arizona. He played, I believe, 14 minutes,
yeah,
but he still got power play time. So it's not like, you know, Paul Maurice is demoting him permanently to the third or fourth line. I mean, this was just an in-game thing to let Nikolaj Ehlers know, okay, you're not untouchable.
Here's the direct quote. It's courtesy of IllegalCurve.com is where Dave has an article posted about it. It's not so much what you would see with the puck. He's a real good player. I'd like to see him driving a little bit harder without it. And to underscore or perhaps quash the panic his comments could cause in a fragile fan base, Coach Maurice added, quote, "This is a really minor one. I just made the change. I thought Nikki could play a little better."
And if you listen to Nikolaj Ehlers' comments yesterday after practice, and for the record, Nikolaj Ehlers is already back playing with Mark Scheifele.
It was a brief interlude during that Coyotes game. Yes.
Yeah, and you know the truth is this, and we oftentimes forget this because, as he said, you know, he's second on the team in scoring, so you think this guy is, you know, he's lights out, and you don't want to kind of mess with his game or do anything to upset his game. But at the same time, Nikolaj Ehlers is a second year player who has to learn the NHL game, and so, we, you know, in any organization, you shouldn't be handing anyone anything. And, you know, it's funny because we talk about this with the Moose and why is Eric Comrie not getting X? And it's like, well, you can't just hand a play. You have to earn it. So, you know, just because you have 15 goals and 25 assists, this is Nikolaj Ehlers, and have now eclipsed your entire points total from your rookie season, you know, you still have to learn the NHL game and you still have to prove that you can play, you know, the full 200-foot game and play using the attributes that you have. And that's Nikolaj Ehlers himself. He, and again, to his credit, was absolutely agreeing with what his goal. I mean, you know, and would he disagree? I mean, we've seen players not necessarily agree. Dustin Byfuglien, when he was asked about, you know, his play in that Pacific swing, wasn't exactly agreeable with what the coach had said. But Nikolaj Ehlers, to his credit, said, I have to use my speed. That's key to me when I don't have the puck, is using my speed to, as he just talked about, getting that time and space and allowing for himself to be in the proper lanes defensively.
And Dave, what's happening there? Paul Maurice is keeping Nikolaj Ehlers accountable. That's what a good head coach does. He's keeping Nikolaj Ehlers accountable for the way he's playing without the puck. So in this case, I think you got to give Paul Maurice credit here. And I realize he's been criticized a lot this year. But in this case, I think, you know, that was the right choice to make.
I'm not going to agree wholeheartedly with what you said there, Ezzy. I'm curious about how much effort was made, and we don't know the answer. How much effort was made off ice and behind the scenes before he brought this forward, and that is sort of what I'm going to use as my determination. And we'll never know. because, you know, we're not privy to what happens behind the scenes. But if this was sort of the first mention of it, and I hope that it wasn't, because I don't think that would have been appropriate. I think that if this was sort of a culmination of a number of discussions that happened behind the scenes, then maybe I can justify Maurice's move. But I did find it to be... It certainly raised eyebrows, at the very least, his comments on Wednesday night about Ehlers.
Well, and when Paul Maurice benched the entire line after Mark Scheifele took that penalty, what was that, 2 months ago? I forget exactly when it was. I mean, nobody expected that, because you expect maybe Mark Scheifele to be benched for a significant amount of time, but not the entire line. So, I mean, coaches sometimes have different ways of getting through to players, right, Drew? So, I mean, in this case, I wouldn't read too much into it, because Nikolaj Ehlers, as Dave mentioned, he's back on the top line. I mean, this is a top guy for the Jets. When you're talking about, you know, the top scorers for this team, it's Ehlers, Scheifele, mm-hmm. Lyon-A, Wheeler. So, Paul Maurice is just trying to keep him accountable, in my opinion.
As we go to break, here was Nikolaj Ehlers after practice yesterday responding to Maurice's comments, or being asked about Maurice's comments after Wednesday's game.
Paul, talked after the last game about how it was a minor thing to move you down in the lineup. How minor did you feel it was?
I didn't play my best game. I haven't played my best in the last couple of games now. And Paul needed to do something about it. And I understand. When I don't feel as good as I used to, I went down and I played with Thorby and Petey, and they talked to me and they really got me going after that. And I feel like I showed that in the third, that I know that I haven't played my best. It's all good. I feel okay.
What do you feel has been lacking from your game?
My speed. The most important thing in my game. I haven't used my speed. I've tried to use it. I haven't used it as much and as well as I have been over the course of this season. I got to use it more, and I got to get back to using it at the right time.
Minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. We're getting you set for the Jets and the Blues, a 2 p.m. puck drop this afternoon at MTS Center, a game you can, of course, hear live on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program TSN 1290 analyst Trevor Kidd. Trevor, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, boys. How's it going?
Doing very well, Trevor. How are you doing?
Good, good.
You know, it's sort of an interesting phenomenon that we're going to be seeing this afternoon at MTS Center. You have the Winnipeg Jets, and their struggles in goal have been certainly well documented this season. And then you got the St. Louis Blues, another team that is absolutely going through the ringer when it comes to the goaltending. Their presumed number one goalie, Jake Allen, is such a shell of himself right now. They left him at home. You know, it's a bizarre situation between these two teams. Is it possible the Jets somehow have the more stable goaltending situation right now than the Blues?
Isn't it crazy just to say that through one game and Pavlik coming up, that could be the case. Hutton's a pretty good goaltender, or at least a pretty good number two. So I think you're going to see St. Louis this afternoon with Hutton in net. I don't know if you're taking a massive step backwards, but I mean, certainly the storyline when you look at Winnipeg and everything, the troubles here the last week or so, and Pavlik coming up, very interesting to see St. Louis kind of going through the same thing and just going on the road here, making a quick trip to Winnipeg, leave their starting netminder at home and tell him, hey, listen, get your stuff together here over the next 48 hours. We're going to need you, but spend some time with your family and get away from the game. So almost unheard of stuff in that regard. I don't know the last time I recall that that's happened in the league with the number one netminder for a NHL hockey club where you just say, hey, you know what, stay at home here. You're playing horse bleep right now, and you need to find your game. So it's very interesting. With Pavlik, I mean, to me, the storyline is still Andrei Pavlik in tonight's or this afternoon's game. It, you know, maybe a little bit of a blessing that he came in, started a little bit rough in that game against Arizona, but it was Arizona. And the competition, I think, this afternoon is going to be a little bit different than Arizona. And certainly tonight's or this afternoon's game, when you start looking forward to Anaheim and San Jose early in the week, you know, how will Pavlik play this afternoon as you, you know, you start looking forward to these next couple games against probably stronger teams offensively.
You know, Trevor, you're just talking about Andrei Pavlik there. I wanted to ask you, what did you think of his play in net on Wednesday night? Not just the goals he allowed, but, you know, how he looked as far as his comfort level in net. And do you think it's the right decision, you know, to run with Andrei Pavlik here?
Oh, boy. Yeah, you know, it. I was excited to watch. I was actually in Toronto for that game and, you know, talking to some of my buddies there. You know, literally, we're clearing the docket for this game. I need to watch because I was excited for the game. I mean, I used to be in that position. I kind of know both sides, Pavlik and Hellebuck, with being, you know, new Canadian market. Pavlik, you know, you're fighting for your rights still. Maybe towards the end of your career, he's wanting to extend it for a few more years, vanish down to the minors to be unheard of again, and, you know, then gets the call back up. So there was a huge part that I was excited just to watch him play and see how he would do. And, I mean, just wanted him to play well. And, you know, you're sitting there, you sit down, you're getting ready to watch this thing, boom, first couple goals go in like that, and they're not good goals. I'm like, this is a horrible start for him. And, you know, watching, you know, you see the camera pan to him and watching his mannerisms or his body language, you know, he just kept fighting. You could see in, again, when looking at his facial expressions that it wasn't really phasing him. And when the game gets going, he gets a couple stops in. Certainly the second period, if you look at the first, it wasn't good. He, I mean, admittedly, let a couple softies in. But you look at the second period, he made some beauty saves. And certainly, hey, that one where he opened up and he got a piece of it with his paddle, yeah, totally lucky stop. But made that stop. It happened. It seemed to kind of energize the team. He made a couple other ones. You know, the uncontested shot is what's been kind of killing Winnipeg and killing the Hellebuck here and or Hutchinson, is those shots that are just, you know, whether it be the soft wrister down the sidelines. When I say sidelines, coming down the wing, top of the circle, you know, even down the middle, the good goaltenders in the league, those stops happen. They make them happen. The good goaltenders in the league, you got to get them moving laterally in order to beat them. But when you got shots that are just going in, again, uncontested, no pressure, wristers from the top of the circles, from the sides, the NHL goalies got to have those these days. And those are the ones that, to me, that were beating Hellebuck, beating Hutchinson, and hurt them. And I look at that game against Arizona with Pavlik. He was making those stops in the second period. He was making those stops in the third period. He was solid in place. So it, again, it's Arizona, though, right? So it, it'll be interesting this afternoon with the team, with the Blues, although their goaltending is struggling, certainly a different team than the Arizona Coyotes.
Trev, the hard reset for Connor Hellebuck, the ability to sit back and kind of work on his game in practice and really not have to have the pressure of games right now, how important is that for a young goalie like Connor Hellebuck?
You know, that's what, when I started the regular season or training camp, I was surprised as anyone that they are going with two young guys. And to me, there's the veteran experience there, the mentorship that is somewhat needed. And I get the goalie coaches there, that you work on the technical things and you work on the mental space between the ears more so than anything. But to me, there's something to be said for having that veteran guy there. And the second part of that was, is that you're given this job or the number one job in a Canadian market to two young guys. And you're going to fight for it. And if you win, you're going to stay in. If you, you know, if you're not playing well, you're going to sit there. So you're almost kind of fighting one another. You're not really supporting one another in those roles. Because, you know, if the other guy plays well, that, you know, your opportunity to be a number one guy is done. So through this, Hellebuck kind of gets, you know, he has opportunities of brilliance. He shows that he can play. And then just in the last couple of weeks, he was fighting it. And, you know, I kind of chuckled a few times. I'm like, this is normal. When I was in Calgary and I was in Toronto, you're always kind of dealing with the media this way. You're dealing with the scrutiny. You're dealing with the intensity. And, hey, at times it's not easy. And Canadian market, number one goaltender, that isn't different than playing in anywhere else, part of the league, North America, whatever way you want to look at it. It's a different beast, mentally more so than anything. So you see the last week or so he's battling, and again, those shots are going in that you need a number one netminder to stop. And, you know, what's it going to look like going forward? At the end of the day, he's played, what, around 60 games?
Yeah.
I mean, that's sometimes what we forget, that to be a number one goaltender, usually to figure these guys out, you're 100 games, you're 150 games into it, realizing, hey, is this guy going to be able to carry the mail for us as an organization for the next 5-10 years? And I think we're still learning that. But it will be interesting, his first game back. I think there is positives for him to get that reset, for him to maybe step away from the game, but step away where you're still involved, not like a Jake out, stay at home here and you're going to take the 48 hours and figure things out. That, you know, Flaherty can work on his game, Pavel can take some of that pressure off of him, and if anything, work on that mental space between the ears.
Trevor Kidd is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Trevor as a TSN 1290 analyst. Trevor, it's not unprecedented. We saw the Islanders go through it earlier in the year, having three goaltenders up on your 23-man roster. But the Jets, obviously, first time I believe that that's happened for them.
Right.
How does it change for the three goalies having, you know, that third guy there? We know that Hutchinson hasn't really seemed to get as much practice time as Hellebuck and Pavlik as of late. So from a goalie's perspective, how difficult is it to have three guys up with the team?
Honestly, it's an absolute pain in the butt. It really is. It is. It's awkward at times. You don't get the work in that you need or you want. The third guy is trying to stay longer after practice. You're trying to corral the Thorburns and Stewarts to stay out. And, hey, please take some more shots at me here. I've only really had about 10 or 15 minutes of work. It's going out there, 10, 15, 20 minutes before with those same type of guys and trying to get some work in before, because you know that, again, generally speaking, the number one guy, and that right now that would be Pavlik, he's getting the workload in the practice. He's not the guy sharing the net. It's the other two. So right now in that situation, Hellebuck and Hutchinson are sharing the net for the most part, trying to get as much work as they can and trying to figure out their game, but they're doing it in one net and doing it together. So there's an awkwardness to it. There's a pain in the keister part to it. It is not an optimal situation, but there's a situation that they've kind of put themselves into, and here's Pavlik back, and he's now have the opportunity, and the next couple weeks is certainly going to be interesting.
Trevor, as a goaltender yourself, you know, Drew just mentioned Michael Hutchinson, and right now it appears for now Michael Hutchinson is the number three guy for the Winnipeg Jets, but when you look at his numbers, they obviously haven't been good. 894 save percentage, goals against is above three. You know, when he came over to Winnipeg a couple of years ago, the year the Jets made the playoffs, you know, he was so solid for the Jets.
What have you
noticed as a goaltender that's different maybe in his play and why he's struggling?
Oh, boy. You know what, It's just making those, and both guys to a fault. If you look at the start of the season, we're letting in those softies at different points of the game, whether it be the start of the second period, the start of the third. It's hard to nitpick Hutchinson in regards to his style of play, because it is different than Pavlik. It's different than Hellebuck. Hellebuck is a guy that's really efficient. And almost efficient to a fault, in my opinion, where he's for the longest time, he gets in his position and hey, this puck is going to hit me heck or high water. And if it doesn't, well, you know what? I'm in my position and it should hit me. I prior to this little stretch here, again, maybe not talking about Hutchinson, but Hellebuck, I thought he was battling for the pucks more. I thought he was opening more athleticism in his game. That, second save, third save, those type of things. We saw him open up a little bit more, maybe not rely as much on his efficiency. And again, I go to battling for pucks, the screenshots, the net front presence that other teams are throwing at the Winnipeg Jets, where you're getting down low and you're trying to find that puck. You're trying to find that body that has the puck. And I thought Hellebuck was doing a better job from, let's say, the end of November, beginning of December, to this last little rough stretch. Hutch, on the other hand, he's a different goaltender. And with him, there is a little bit more perceived, not compete, but you see him, there's more athleticism to his game. And the thing that I think that's hurt Hutchinson the most has been the soft goals. And if he eliminated those from his game, if you look at the game against San Jose, he says the first goal, again, that soft wrister that comes down, beats him far side, you have to have those goals. You know, the unlucky one where it goes off his skate, you know, again, unlucky, the post can't go in the National Hockey League. So to me, it's a matter of Hutchinson. Is there one thing in his style that hurts him? I wouldn't say. It's just being more consistent in his play and not letting those softies in at crucial times in a game.
Trevor Kidd is a TSN 1290 analyst. Trevor, really appreciate your time and your insight into the Jets' goaltending situation. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, boys. Have a good day.
Take care, morning. Trevor. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. When we come back, we are going to talk about the Blues and their struggles in goal and how do they turn their goaltending around. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
There's a lot in his head. There's, you know, he's kind of locked up mentally, and he's going to have to fight through this. I mean, it's like any other athlete. He's going to have to fight through this. But what we see at practice, we like. That's why we put him back in, quite frankly. And we know right now we're going to need way better just to be competitive. So beating it up anymore isn't going to do us any good, but we got to get him unlocked. He's just locked right up.
That is St. Louis Blues head coach Ken Hitchcock discussing Jake Allen. Now, Jake Allen, of course, young goaltender. They traded Brian Elliott away in the offseason, thinking finally Allen is ready to take the ball and run with it as the St. Louis Blues' number one goaltender. It has been an unmitigated disaster for Jake Allen and the Blues' goaltending this season. We'll talk about it this segment on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment, of course, brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Jake Allen has been bad all season. It finally came to a head after Thursday night's game against the Washington Capitals when he was pulled not once, but twice in that game against the Caps. Pulled for the third straight game and fourth time in six games as the Blues were blown out on home ice by the Washington Capitals. Jake Allen, in his last three starts, he has allowed 10 goals on 36 shots, a .722 save percentage. His season save percentage has dropped to .897. Things are so bad that the St. Louis Blues have elected to leave Jake Allen at home, not even bringing him to Winnipeg, and they've called up, as we mentioned off the start of the show, Phoenix Copley, a young goaltender they acquired from the Washington Capitals a couple years ago. We don't yet know if it's going to be Carter Hutton, who's their backup. He hasn't had a great year. He's got an .892 save percentage. Or if they're going to try and catch lightning in a bottle and go with Phoenix Copley, who had success here at MTS Center just earlier this week.
Yeah, and we've got Jeremy Rutherford coming up in about 10 minutes, and he's going to let us know who he thinks, or maybe he knows, is going to start for the St. Louis Blues this afternoon against the Jets, Drew. But, I mean, let's be honest here. The goaltending has been a disaster. It's been talked about a lot here on the station and really across the hockey world. I mean, Jake Allen, Drew, has 4 years left on his contract after this year,
mm-hmm.
right? Because he just signed that contract extension recently. So, I mean, the Blues have committed long-term to Jake Allen, and they traded Brian Elliott to the Calgary Flames for a second-round pick. So, I mean, it's been very disappointing in net for the St. Louis Blues. Carter Hutton, a former backup with the Nashville Predators, has actually outplayed Jake Allen over the last several weeks. But, I mean, this is a team right now that just needs a guy who can stop the puck, similar to the Winnipeg Jets.
Absolutely.
But this Blues team has aspirations of going deep into the playoffs. We know it's Ken Hitchcock's last year as head coach, and then Mike Yeo, current assistant coach, is going to take over for Ken Hitchcock. So, I mean, there is pressure on this Blues team, the Blues organization, Doug Armstrong included, mm-hmm. to go deep into the playoffs. We saw the St. Louis Blues last year, again, fail to get to the Stanley Cup Finals. How many years have we been talking about the St. Louis Blues potentially being, you know, one of those teams that can take the next step, right, Drew? I mean, year after year, it's been either goaltending or, you know, not getting that timely scoring. And then along comes Vladimir Tarasenko, yeah. a real game breaker. I mean, the Blues have already always had a good supporting cast. I mean, David Backes is a good player, and they decided not to bring him back. But, I mean, there's a lot of good players on this team, both on forward and on defense. But right now, I mean, you can look at the numbers. You just talked about it, Drew. I mean, they got shell-shocked 7-3 by the Washington Capitals. By the way, it seems like every single team the Washington Capitals plays, they score 7 goals. Yeah. They scored 7 or 8 against the Pittsburgh Penguins a week ago.
Yeah, Penguins had 7 last night against the Hurricanes as well.
But so you're talking about two of the best offensive teams in the league. But, you know, back to St. Louis. I mean, Jake Allen, I mean, he's going to sit this road trip out here, but he's still the guy. And, you know, Phoenix Copley gets called up for the American Hockey League. He's been playing very well in the American Hockey League.
11-4-1 for Phoenix Copley with a 2.32 goals against average and a .920 save percentage.
Yeah.
So he's been very good, you're absolutely right, for the Chicago Wolves. But Jake Allen, his contract, his new 4-year contract, doesn't even kick in until next season.
Right.
So, you know, they had Brian Elliott and they had Jake Allen as the two goalies for so many years, and Allen was always the goaltender of the future. I mean, you've got to remember that the Blues have, in the last decade, actually had an abundance of riches when it comes to goaltending. Ben Bishop was a member of the St. Louis Blues, you know, back in the day, but people forget about that.
Well, they've had Yaroslav Halak, they've had Ryan Miller. We talked about Brian Elliott. They finally, you know, traded him. And as you mentioned, yes, Jake Allen has 4 years left on his contract. They don't kick in until next year, and they have committed to him. But, you know, Phoenix Copley is 25 years old, doesn't have a lot of NHL experience. I think he's only played one NHL game. You mentioned he was acquired in the Oshie trade with Washington.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe he gets the start here. I don't know if you want to put him in against this Jets team right now because you need the wins. Maybe they go with Carter Hutton, a guy who's played very well against the Jets when he was a member of the Predators. But, I mean, this is a big problem right now. And, you know, you don't want to start talking about maybe, you know, trading, you know, their goaltender right now. But it's bad. And, you know, this St. Louis Blues team cannot afford to miss the playoffs.
No, certainly can't. And they need a dramatic turnaround from Jake Allen, Dave, to get their season back on course. Because with all due respect to Carter Hutton, he's not the long-term answer for if this team is able to indeed make the playoffs. Carter Hutton has been a career NHL backup.
Yeah, and the fact is that if you guys remember when the Jets were going into St. Louis earlier in the season, St. Louis was practically unbeaten. They were either unbeaten or they had one loss at the Scott Trade Center. And now they're 16-7-4. They're 2-6-1 in their last 9 games at Scott Trade. So they've really, I mean, think about that. They were 14-1-3, and now they've lost. They're 2-6-1. So they've been terrible on home ice of late, and they're 7-11-1 on the road. So they haven't been good on the road, and that's something Winnipeg can take advantage of. And as you guys have already discussed, the fact is that this St. Louis team doesn't have any problems putting the puck in the net. Their goals for are very strong. It's the defense and the goaltending. They're not keeping the puck out of the net. So, I mean, maybe this will do it. And again, we don't know yet what they're going to do in net, whether they will go to Phoenix Copley, who, like I said, I saw him last Friday. He was very good against the Moose team. Will he be very good against an NHL team? You know, it's another story, of course. So we shall see. But, you know, it's funny that we're even talking about, like, I can't even imagine, you know, that we're talking about St. Louis in the same breath of, you know, Nashville or Dallas or, you know, the Canucks or even the Jets.
As the middling playoff team.
Like, sure. To me, that's a shocking statement. Going into this year, I never would have anticipated St. Louis being in, sort of mentioned in that same breath. Of course, I don't know how many people anticipated that Minnesota would be tops amongst in the league with Chicago in the West. But so I'm definitely surprised at St. Louis, especially with a coach like Hitchcock. I mean, maybe he's a lame duck coach, maybe because it's his final year. They don't have to worry about the fear of Hitchcock. But you know, again, I still think he's an excellent coach, and I, you know, it just goes to show you how big an aspect the mental play. Because look, let's be realistic. You know, Allen's not playing in a Canadian market, and I'm not demeaning St. Louis by any stretch of imagination, but I don't know that the Blues are the number one focus of folks in St. Louis, and yet, you know, they have a goaltender who has mental issues right now and is dealing with the pressure of being that number one goalie, mm-hmm. knowing, like you guys have already touched on, that his 4-year contract extension isn't even kicked in yet. I mean, we have that situation here with Matthew Perreault, who's played better of late, but and you know, there's some irony there that you're sitting there going, we haven't even gotten you to the point where your contract is really kicking in, and yet your play is not even meriting like any talk of you being our number one goalie right now, let alone our number one goalie for the next 4 years. So it's a tough one. I think they probably made the right decision, similar to what the Jets are doing in terms of giving him a little bit of time away from the game, letting him try and fix his game off the ice and, you know.
Get out of it. Because
the truth is, and if you talk to some goalie, I mean, look, goalies are a different breed than forwards and defensemen. They just are. It just, and I'm not saying that they're all alike, but there's just a difference with goaltenders than you get with other players. And I think a lot of it is mental. And you talk to guys who manage to change their game, like a Devan Dubnyk, who, you know, went from, you know, a tire fire in Edmonton to what he's doing in Minnesota. And sure, of course, it's a better structured defensive team in Minnesota, but there's also a lot of a mental aspect of Devan Dubnyk's talked about how he's had to change his game. So, you know, I don't think that Allen is incapable of doing something similar. It's just he just needs that opportunity.
More on the Blues coming up next with Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, hour number two coming up on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Jeremy Rutherford of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch going to join us momentarily here on the program. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. And if you're looking for a place to watch this afternoon's Jets game, Bernstein's Deli is that place. Cordon Village Mall for Bernstein's Deli. Trying to get Jeremy Rutherford online. He actually just called my cell phone. So he's talking to Alex, producer Alex, right now. So we're going to call Jeremy back, I think, momentarily to get him on to get him online.
Yeah, speaking of, you know, cell phones, during the break, Dave M. gets a call from none other than Gary Lawless telling Dave M. that he's doing a great job on the show. Where's my phone call, Gary?
Probably going to be waiting a long time for that phone call, is he? Was that Jeremy said we're going to call Jeremy back right now? Okay, there you go. So Jeremy's calling just to touch base. Everything's happening.
Like, the lawman better not say that he lost my number, because I text him almost every day.
I'm pretty sure he's blocked you in every capacity.
Twitter, Facebook, you can block cell phone numbers, apparently.
In the 6 years the Jets have been back, I have gotten zero phone calls from Gary Lawless telling me that I've done a good job.
Well, maybe it's time you step up your game. You know, maybe there's a subtle message in there, Ezzie.
I think what Gary's saying is that more Minook, less Ginsburg.
I think everybody's saying it's more Minook, less Ginsburg.
I think that was the name of the show, actually.
Yeah, more Minook, less Ginsburg. Let's go to the Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Good morning, Jeremy. Jeremy Rutherford from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch joins us now. Hi, how you doing, Jeremy?
Doing well, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. Thanks very much for joining us. Apologies in the couple-second delay getting you on air. We're going to take our producer out back and beat him up a little bit after the show.
No, I think it was my fault.
It's all good, Jeremy.
Yeah, good luck with that. Alex is pretty solid.
Yeah, no, I can't beat up anybody. Absolutely nobody at all. Jeremy, obviously the Jets and the Blues in about 5 hours' time from MTS Center. Here in Winnipeg, you know, we've been talking about goaltending pretty much all season. It's been a struggle for the Winnipeg Jets. And not much different in St. Louis. Jake Allen, as we've talked about on the show throughout the first hour, left at home, said to get away from the game, try and clear his head. You know, you cover the Blues. You've covered the Blues for years. Have you ever seen a situation like this with Jake Allen where the team is really just desperate at this point in time to get him to back on track?
No, I can't say that I've seen this with any Blues goaltender in the 12 years that I've been covering the team or the time that I've lived in St. Louis. I mean, they've obviously had issues with their goaltending for years and years and years, as you guys talk about with Winnipeg this year. A lot of teams do. But none to the level where you need to just tell your guy to stay home and forget about hockey for 48 hours. So that's what they've done for Jake Allen. The thing is, they're saying that it's a reset, a chance for him to hit the reset. The reason they're taking this extreme is because they've already had two or three resets with Jake Allen. You know, it was just a week ago where they gave backup Carter Hutton three straight starts and said, hey, this is a chance for Jake to figure things out. They brought him back. And he hasn't been able to turn the page. You guys saw the game the other night against Washington. He was pulled twice. So the save percentage is now below 900. Carter Hutton can't play every single night, so they made the decision for Jake to stay home and send Phoenix Copley on the trip. And I really do believe that Phoenix Copley is going to get the start today.
You know, Jeremy, you know, talking about the goaltending, and, you know, looks like, as you said, Phoenix Copley is going to get the start this afternoon versus the Jets. How concerned is the Blues brain trust with the goaltending right now, considering that Jake Allen's four-year contract extension doesn't kick in until next year?
Yeah, I think that's the concern right there. I think that they still believe that they have a quality young goaltender. I mean, this is a guy who was groomed for 4.5 years in the American Hockey League. He won the AHL Goalie of the Year. He played terrifically the past couple of years in a tandem with Brian Elliott and Jim Corsi, who's been around the game a long time, Dominic Hasek, Ryan Miller, a lot of goaltenders that he's worked with. He says Jake Allen's got all the tools, the most tools he's ever seen with a good young goaltender. So they believe that the talent hasn't been lost. Ken Hitchcock has used the words that he's just locked up right now, and so he's trying to figure it out. So, you know, is there some concern within the Blues management, Doug Armstrong, the general manager, about Jake Allen and his future? Yeah, heck yeah, there is, with a four-year contract that kicks in next year, because they've really made their bed with Jake Allen as their starting goaltender, and they're just crossing their fingers right now that this is just part of the process, even though it's gotten a little hairy here lately.
Jeremy, we talk about the St. Louis Blues goaltending. Has it been all the goalies' responsibility, this kind of poor showing, or has the team defense collectively not been great either?
Well, the best way to answer that is two ways. One, when you lose guys like David Backes and Troy Brower and Steve Ott, the Blues are, I think, in a transition year. They're playing a bit of a different style. You know, the past 5 years or so, they've won a lot of games, and it's been with that heavy game. You know, they're good on the forecheck, and it's been good for them. But this year, they're a smaller lineup, and they wanted to play fast. They knew they were small. They wanted to play fast, up-tempo. But they haven't played that five-man unit where they can move the puck fast and look fast. So in part, it's a transition year, and I think that's why, if you look at the record or you wonder, you don't watch a lot of Blues games and you wonder why they haven't been as good as they've been the past couple of years, that's the main reason. Lately here, it's a bit on the goaltending. They just find themselves down 1-0, 2-0 in the first period, and then the rest of the game they're chasing. When they have gotten good goaltending lately from Carter Hutton, they had back-to-back wins in San Jose and in Anaheim, it's because they got the good goaltending early in the game. They established a lead, and then they were able to kind of build on it and play their game. So that's kind of been the story here with the Blues lately.
Jeremy Rutherford is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the St. Louis Blues. Jeremy covers the team for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Jeremy, we know that this is supposed to be Ken Hitchcock's final season behind the Blues bench. We know Mike Yeo was hired as the coach in waiting. How has the dynamic been between those two gentlemen throughout the course of the season?
Yeah, I think pretty good. You know, it's really hard. You know, as much as we like to say we know what goes on behind the scenes, it's tough for us to know what the relationship is behind the closed doors in the coach's office. You know, but everything that we can tell seems to be that it's going smoothly. And I think a lot of credit goes to these two guys. Ken Hitchcock, when he found out that Doug Armstrong wanted to hire Mike Yeo as the coach in waiting, he went out to the airport and picked him up and said, hey, let's do this thing. And so they've really been trying to feed off each other. You also have to credit Mike Yeo. I've talked to Mike a number of times about this, and he just says, hey, this is Ken's team, whatever he wants. I'm here for him. I'm here to make him look better. So that's the way they're approaching it right now. I think a lot of people on the outside view it as, hey, you know, if the losing adds up and things don't go well, could they make that switch sooner than possible? Hey, that's certainly a possibility. But I really believe that Doug Armstrong wants Ken Hitchcock to see the year out. I do think that he likes the idea of Mike Yeo learning on the job, getting to know the personalities, getting to know what he likes, what he wants to do in his second job after it didn't work out in Minnesota, and having a full year to do that. I don't think he wants to pull the trigger unless that absolutely becomes necessary.
Jeremy, is Ken Hitchcock retiring from being an NHL head coach, or is he retiring from being the St. Louis Blues head coach?
It's funny that you ask, because right before you guys called, I'm working on a story. Ken Hitchcock needs two more victories to catch Al Arbor for number three all time. And he's already come out and said that this is going to be his last year behind the Blues bench. The Blues have made that known, as we just talked about. A lot of people who are close to Ken Hitchcock think that he'll be coaching somewhere next year. And it won't be St. Louis, obviously. So I asked Ken Hitchcock for this story that I'm writing about him catching Al Arbor, will you be coaching next year? And he says he can't think 24 hours ahead. He said right now he's thinking about 12 hours ahead. So he does know that he wants to be part of a team. He wants to be competing somehow, any capacity. He just loves to feel part of a team. He says it doesn't have to be coaching, but he says he'll see where it leads and takes him from here. But I got to believe that we all know what Ken Hitchcock thinks about the game and how involved he is. I got to believe that he'll be coaching somewhere next year that's not in St. Louis.
Jeremy, it looks like Patrick Berglund is going to play between Robbie Fabry and Vladimir Tarasenko this afternoon. Is this a line that we could see long-term, or is this just Ken Hitchcock getting out the line blender?
I think he's getting out the blender for the main reason they're trying to get Tarasenko going. Hey, guys, that last game against Washington, they lost 7-3, and the line of Schwartz, Stastny, and Steen was a +7. I mean, that's just ridiculous when you play a game and you lose 7-3. So they really like that line, but the thing they need to do is get Tarasenko going. He's not scored in his last six games. He's been stuck on 20 goals for six games. Doesn't sound like a long time, but it is with Vladdy, a guy who usually scores every other night. And the thing is, he's getting checked to death. I mean, teams are just putting two guys on him, and his line mates aren't helping open any space. For a while there, he had Nail Yakupov on his line. Lately, he's had Dmitry Yashkin. And right now, Patrick Berglund's the best forward on the Blues. That might sound like a surprise, but I think he's up to like 10 goals in his last 14 games. It might be the most in the NHL in that stretch. I think it is. And so they just want to put some line mates with Tarasenko that'll open up some space. Tarasenko's got a lot of chemistry with Robbie Fabry, so that's the line you'll see today with Fabry, Berglund, and Tarasenko.
Jeremy, the Blues were unbeatable at home for the longest time, and as you wrote in your column, now they're 2-6-1 in their last nine games at Scott Trade. Are fans starting to lose patience with this team? Are they starting to clamor for change?
No, I think what it is a lot of people are having a tough time realizing that it's a transition year that we talked about a moment ago. A lot of fans think that the Blues should have done more to build on the trip to the Western Conference Finals. And I don't disagree with them. Hey, when you haven't gone to the Conference Finals since 2001 and you go last year and you lose your couple games away from your first trip to the Stanley Cup Finals since 1970, you know, I think fans wanted to see more done. And whether it be re-sign Backes and Brouwer or bring somebody else in, you know, hey, let's try to build on that. But I think the timing of what happened with not re-signing Backes and trying to play a different style and, you know, having other guys to re-sign so it didn't allow you to really go out and add to this group, I think that's what they're having a tough time with. It might not be, you know, losing at home. I think it's that there was just so much excitement after last season, and then you're going into your 50th year of your existence. You got the Winter Classic. There was a lot of build-up to this season, and it's been a little bit of a letdown. I think that's where the disappointment lies.
Jeremy Rutherford, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jeremy covers the St. Louis Blues for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Jeremy, the last couple seasons, the Blues have lost David Backes for nothing in free agency. They lost Troy Brouwer for nothing in free agency. We all know the rumors surrounding Kevin Shattenkirk. He's an unrestricted free agent. At season's end, it seems quite unlikely that he's going to re-sign with the Blues. If you were a betting man, would you expect that there's going to be a trade made with regard to Shattenkirk before the March 1st deadline?
Yeah, I think they have to trade Kevin Shattenkirk. They've been talking about it for a year or two now, and I think we're getting to that point. I think if you're contending for the division title and you think you got a team that can go three rounds in the playoffs like they did last year, I think they perhaps hold on to Kevin Shattenkirk like they did last year with Backes and Brouwer, knowing that they could potentially lose them for nothing at the end of the year like they did. You know, Doug Armstrong thinks it's worth the gamble to do that. But this year, when you're talking about a team, I think it's, what is it, 1 point now separating the third-place Blues and fourth-place Nashville, I think. You know, you're in the mix. You can make the playoffs. But I think to lose Kevin Shattenkirk at the end of the year for nothing would be another huge mistake in terms of losing assets. So I'm not sure what Kevin Shattenkirk as a rental player will get you, probably you know, a top prospect. But if he's not going to sign an extension with a team, which I don't think at this point he would, then I don't know that you're going to get much in return like St. Louis Blues fans are hoping for right now. I think that ship has kind of sailed. There was some talk last year with Edmonton, but Kevin Shattenkirk didn't want to go to Edmonton, where maybe they could work out a long-term deal and the Blues could get something good in return, but that just doesn't look like it's going to happen. But I do think he'll be traded.
Jeremy, we've just got one last question for you, and we appreciate you coming on again this morning.
Yeah.
Sticking with defensemen, Colton Parayko, he had such an incredible rookie season last year, 33 points, played the full season with the Blues. How would you assess his sophomore season thus far?
Really good. It doesn't show up on the stat sheet. You know, he had that huge plus-minus last year. I think it was plus 31. I think he had nine goals. Maybe the plus-minus wasn't 31, but it was nine goals, and it just he just burst onto the scene, right? And everybody said, wow, look at this young guy. Let me tell you that I've watched him every night this year, and he is so good defensively that it's offsetting his lack of offense this year. I think he has two goals like in the last four or five games, so he scored here recently. But he went the longest time, 100 shots. He took 100 shots to start the year and didn't have a goal. So nobody could have predicted that. But Doug Armstrong, Ken Hitchcock, they still really like what he's doing defensively, and they should, because he's a guy who can just get the puck out of the zone. He's a one-man guy who can get the team out of trouble in the defensive zone. So just in his second year, I don't think you can look at this and say it's a sophomore slump, only offensively, and I do think that's going to turn around at some point for him.
Jeremy, we lied. One last question. Patrick Berglund, he's a UFA at season's end. You mentioned how imperative he's been to the Blues team as of late. What's he going to look for in a new contract, and have they really started contract negotiations with him?
Talking about Berglund, you said?
Yeah, Berglund.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? This is a weird deal because the Blues are kind of teetering there, you know, on a playoff spot, and obviously we're still weeks away from the trade deadline, but what Patrick Berglund's doing, if the Blues do fall out of this, he might be a little bit of a trade chip. I mean, it's almost like finding a $50 bill in your jeans when you're doing the laundry or something, because a month ago they didn't think they had this, and he's really turned it up here lately. So, you know, if you're in the playoff picture, it seems like he's a guy who could help you. And then, you know, in the off season, maybe you talk an extension. You know, he's a $3.7 million guy now. So, you know, I would think he'd be somewhere in that range. You know, I don't think he's in for a big boost, probably in the $4 million range. You know, if you find yourself falling out of the playoff picture, I could see a team having some interest in Patrick Berglund, and maybe like Shattenkirk, he's a guy that they move. So his future kind of still uncertain right now.
Jeremy Rutherford covers the St. Louis Blues for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Jeremy, really appreciate your time and your analysis this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll see you in a few hours at the rink, buddy.
Yeah, we'll see you at the game. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jeremy. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we discuss the heat, if there is any, that Kevin Cheveldayoff should be facing for this Jets season. You're listening to TSN 1290. It's an IC Saturday. Big thanks to Jeremy Rutherford for joining us. Great insight into the St. Louis Blues. A lot of criticism, of which I count myself as one individual. A lot of criticism handed out to Paul Maurice for the Jets' performance this season. The struggles of the Winnipeg Jets. 21-23-4, 6 games under 500 after 48 games. Don't hear a ton of criticism this year being leveled at the feet of Kevin Cheveldayoff. I ask you guys, should Kevin Cheveldayoff be feeling more heat for the performance of the Jets? Because from my perspective, it seems like Maurice is really, right now, the guy who's in the frying pan, and for whatever reason, Kevin Cheveldayoff has been able to float above the fray and sort of keep his name out of the crosshairs right now.
Well, I guess it depends if you're talking about heat from the fans or you're talking about heat from ownership.
Well, I don't think ownership's putting heat on anybody, which is a separate issue altogether. Well, I'm talking about heat from fans, heat from media, heat from outside observers.
Well, I think that all exists already. I mean, I think this year with the way the Jets have played, Drew, I mean, we listen to the calls. I mean, when we're on the pre- and post-game show, we hear the calls. And we talk to fans all the time. We hear the fans on Twitter. I mean, I think Jets fans are pretty upset with the way things have gone this year, especially when you have Patrick Laine, you know, doing what he's done this year, and Nikolai Ehlers and Mark Scheifele was leading the league in points for a while. So I think there's always going to be heat on the general manager and the head coach, Drew, when the team isn't doing very well. And I think there's heat right now in Boston on Claude Julien. I think there's heat in Colorado with Joe Sakic and not Jared Bednar so much because he was just hired. But I think whenever there's a team struggling, there's going to be a certain amount of heat. I think the bigger question is there heat on Kevin Cheveldayoff from Jets ownership, specifically Mark Chipman. And, I mean, look, Kevin Cheveldayoff has another year left on his contract. We know that. He's been the only general manager the Jets have had. I mean, I think if anything, you know, if we're talking about what you could question Kevin Cheveldayoff on is maybe not addressing the depth at the goaltender position, I think specifically bringing in a veteran.
Well, I think it's been two straight years now where Kevin Cheveldayoff has made fundamental errors with regard to depth situations with the Winnipeg Jets.
Right.
Last year they went so young that they couldn't insulate any of the youth when things turned poorly, as they often do with young players. Didn't bring back any veteran players, didn't have any veteran presence. Rectified that a little bit this offseason by bringing in a guy like Sean Mathias in who provides some depth. But then again, this year he makes the error of not bringing in a veteran goaltender who can provide some insulation if Connor Hellebuck struggles, if Michael Hutchinson struggles, you know, by sending Andre Pavlik down to the AHL and leaving him there for 48 games. I think those are two, in back-to-back years, those are two fundamental errors made by the general manager of the Winnipeg Jets that can be pinpointed as reasons why the Jets are struggling and or not making the playoffs.
Sure, and I could listen to that argument. And, you know, your question at the beginning of the segment, Drew, was, is Kevin Cheveldayoff feeling heat right now? And, I mean, that was my answer. I mean, as far as fans go, I mean, sure, you're always going to hear fans saying the coach should be fired, we need a new GM and everything like that. I don't think he's going anywhere. And as far as I'm concerned this year, I mean, let's be honest, Chevy's big moves were signing Mark Scheifele to the 8-year contract extension. Last year, signing Dustin Byfuglien to the 5-year contract extension. I mean, those were the bigger moves. As far as who he could bring in, I mean, let's be honest, if the Jets have 3 or 4 more wins here, are we even having this conversation? I mean, the margin for error is so slim right now. And, you know, you have to also, as far as I'm concerned, you have to look at, when you're talking about the GM and the coach, you have to look at where the team is heading. I truly believe the team is heading in the wrong direction. As far as fans
go... In the wrong direction?
No, the right direction.
Okay, you said wrong. I just wanted to clarify that.
I meant to say right direction.
Okay.
The fans, I think, though, especially the fans that are paying the big bucks for season tickets, they want results now. I mean, look at Drew. I've said this repeatedly on the show. We're on twice a week. I thought the Jets could be a playoff team this year. And this isn't me as a fan. I was trying to be, as objective as possible. And, you know, I did think Patrick Laine was going to be very good this year. I didn't think the goaltending was going to struggle as much as it has. But, I mean, fans are, I mean, let's be honest, the angstometer, as Patrick Williams used to call it, the fan angst is very high right now. And fans want more wins. Fans want to see this team in the playoffs. Could Kevin Cheveldayoff have made a couple of other moves to improve this team? Yes. But, I mean, we knew this team was going to be young. So we knew they were going to go with Nikolai Ehlers, Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor. I mean, who out there was Kevin Cheveldayoff going to bring in to make this team better? a veteran defenseman, a veteran goaltender. Sure. What veteran defensemen were actually available for Kevin Cheveldayoff to acquire? We know how hard it is to acquire a steady veteran defenseman. I'm just saying right now, I mean, you asked the question. I don't think he's feeling any heat from ownership. As far as fans go, I think the entire team is feeling heat.
You know what? It's funny because you sit there and you think to yourself, what is your objective? What is the purpose of your vision? And I think, and again, this is my own observation, is that Kevin Cheveldayoff's idea was, you know, that you're going to have a younger team that's going to grow together, right? And now, of course, you have some older veterans like Blake Wheeler and Brian Little that are older in quotes.
Yeah, hockey years.
You know, but who are going to have to deal with kind of the hiccup that that brings. But then, you know, again, the only error, if you want to call it that, that I would see that the organization has made from this perspective, we're talking about this year. I'm not talking about the totality of his reign, but is the fact that I in my opinion, I think they rushed Connor Hellebuyck into the position of a number one. You know, Steve Alakette, former Rangers goalie, who's, you know, he's an analyst now and does a lot of he's on TSN quite a bit.
Yeah, talked about Rick a whole bunch.
Yeah, and he basically was on with Rick yesterday, and he was talking about how on average an NHL goalie has played 200 AHL games, not always, but on average, has played 200 AHL games before they take over the reins.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ask me what was the mistake, I would say probably the mistake was, you know, not having a veteran. It doesn't have to be Andrei Pavlik. It could have been, but because I didn't think anybody was taking Andrei Pavlik's contract. So, you know, and you could have been like, just to know that, okay, if Connor Hellebuyck has, you know, Michael Hutchinson isn't going to go in there and steal you games. You know, again, Michael Hutchinson's okay as a once in a while, but like if you need someone to kind of be a steady presence, and again, Michael Hutchinson's young. You know, it's not like you've got a guy who you can lean on and be like, well, what when it was lean for you, what was it like? Because really, we're not talking about a guy who's 5 or 6 or 7 years older who has all those more NHL games than Connor Hellebuyck. So I just look at it and I think to myself, if the problem is you're dealing with two things. You're dealing with the long-term vision with the Jets saying, what are we? Are we a team that's competing for a playoff spot, a Stanley Cup? Are we going to make a bunch of moves now to do that, jeopardize our long-term goal and vision? Or are we going to have to deal with the short-term pain? And again, we live in an instant gratification society. So fans, and I get it, they want, and when you're shelling out big money, you want to know that you're getting your money's worth. But at the same time, you want to know that, like I said, I look at the guys who we see in the Moose all the time, Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, Chase DeLeo, all these younger players who could be your future. Don't rush them. Eric Comrie. People are asking about Eric Comrie. I mean, Eric Comrie's best spot should never see the NHL this season. He should be in the AHL.
And probably next year, too.
I would have no problem with that. The fact is that, like, you know, the goaltenders especially, that's the one rush, if you ask me, that this organization has made, was Connor Hellebuyck would have been better served being in the AHL this season. This is my opinion. I could be wrong. But my own personal opinion is I think Connor Hellebuyck and Eric Comrie as your 1A, 1B goalies with the Moose. You could run Pavlik and Hutchinson and call it a lost season, call it whatever you will. You know, because the reality is you didn't even know you were going to get Patrick Laine. You know what I mean? Like when you had the objective, like before that lottery ball fell in your favor, you potentially could have had someone, you know, you could have had Matthew Tkachuk, who obviously wouldn't have been a bad thing. But you know what I mean? Like you could have had
Olli Juolevi.
Exactly. And then you're talking long-term development as well. So, I mean, all I'm saying is you didn't know you were going to get Patrick Laine. You didn't know you were going to have 21 goals from this super rookie. And the reality is you had guys like Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, all guys who need time to develop, Eric Comrie, and I would argue Connor Hellebuyck, time to develop within the AHL system. And then once they're AHL proven, then you give them the NHL job. That's my own personal opinion.
The Nashville Predators are back into a playoff spot. Adam Vingan of the Tennessean joins us next to discuss the Jets' Central Division rival. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.